welcome to the Africa Matters podcast. We are so excited that you could join us for yet another episode of this incredible platform where young Africans engage on critical topics. Now, once again, our standard disclaimer, if you're looking for a podcast that talks about the shortfalls of Africa, that just highlights how Africa is the dark continent with no hope and full of absolute despair, then this, my friend, is not the right podcast for you. But if you are looking for a podcast where young Africans and diaspora engage on critical issues that are so important for Africa's growth and development, then this is indeed the podcast for you. With that being said, welcome again to the Africa Matters podcast. My name is Farai Mubaiwa, and Africa Matters is part of the Engage podcast network. So for today's topic, we've got a really, really incredible speaker, someone who I tend to hype up every time because she is just an incredible and a phenomenal woman. Her name is Rianne Olivier, and she's actually the co-founder of the Africa Matters Initiative. Rianne and I have been linked and have been friends for such a long time. We've been on the Africa Matters journey since 2015. And today we're so privileged to have her here to talk to us about what are the struggles of Black-owned nonprofits and how can we overcome this? Welcome, Rianne, to the Africa Matters podcast.
Thank you so much, Farai. It's a pleasure being with you today.
And so, Rianne, thank you so much for joining us. Now, just before we get started with the more challenging questions of the topic we're going to look at, well, we're going to play a quick game. The name changes each time we play it on the show, but it's called the Alphabet African Country Game. Okay. Now, can you list for us African countries starting with a J, a K, and an L?
Okay. So there are no countries on the continent that starts with a J. I would say Djibouti that has a J after the D comes close, but there's no country on the continent that starts with a J. K is Kenya, which comes to mind. I don't think there's another one. I don't know. I'm not sure. But Kenya. And then L, either Liberia or Libya.
And this is exactly why you are the CEO of Africa Matters.
We are the ones that we've been waiting for.
We are the ones we've been waiting for. Awesome, awesome. Now, Rianne, I know that I know your journey really well, but I'd like you to please tell us about yourself and your journey for the listeners here who'd like to find out about your exact involvement in Africa Matters.
Sure. As Farai mentioned, I'm Rianne Olivier. I am Haitian American. Both of my parents migrated to the States in the mid to late 80s. And I've grown up here ever since in a very multicultural upbringing. At home, I had a very traditional Haitian style family and upbringing, and in school and in my social life was very American. However, I was very lucky to have very interesting parents who were very intrigued about the world, and they were so much more intrigued in Africa and really understanding our roots and our ancestry. And so that was actually how the African continent and culture really kind of stemmed into my life. In about, I think, the late 90s, my father moved to South Africa for about 2 years, and our family was actually meant to move there as well, but things just didn't pan out the way in which it originally planned. But eventually I found my way there in 2011, actually 9 years ago, 2 days ago, interestingly enough. That was the first time I arrived in my journey in South Africa. Prior to that, I did travel to the country, but I migrated to South Africa to study at Stellenbosch University, where I actually met Farai. And while I was there, I obtained my bachelor's in honors in international studies, currently doing my master's in international studies as well. And throughout that journey in South Africa, I was so privileged to meet such inspiring intellectual Africans within the spaces that I was in. I was very lucky to not just be intertwined with South African culture, but Zimbabwean, Nigerian, Cameroonian, Ugandan, and many other African countries. And it made me really appreciate and value where I came from. you know, prior to me actually being in SA, the first couple of years when I started living in SA, I focused a lot more in terms of telling people that I was American. And then when people started questioning where exactly I was from, then I started really referring back into my ancestry of Haiti. And so in 2015, as Farai mentioned, Farai actually introduced the African Matters movement to me. And we had a discussion about our frustrations of like what was currently happening in the present tense with the Charlie Hebdo attacks versus the attacks that were happening in Baghdad and the misrepresentation and highlight of African bodies in media. And then we were also speaking about our personal identities. As I mentioned, me now like really recognizing that I'm more Haitian than I am American. And, you know, Farai explained her difference of identity of being both South African and Zimbabwean within the space that we were in. And we thought that, like, let's try to make this more into a collaborative effort. And we were able to get more people involved in the mission and the movement, and we transitioned into an initiative. In 2016, I migrated back to the States for a couple of years, and I worked under the Alumni and Development Department for an institution in South Africa. And then I pretty much pivoted my career a little bit into nonprofit a bit more, but focusing more on the continent as a whole than from my niche of South Africa. I worked there for about 2 years and transitioned out into really focusing on Africa Matters a bit more full time. I had got into this cycle of having very non-supportive women of non-color supervisors who just didn't believe in the growth or my potential as a woman of color. And so to be very frank, I was really fed up of the treatments and the lack of salaries or worth within the space. And I said to myself, if I know my worth and I know other people's worth, then I could surely do this more full time. And so, yeah, that is where I am now. And that's my journey. I'm focusing on AMI a bit more full time.
Thanks so much for sharing that, Drianne. And you are honestly such a powerhouse, you know, as we speak and as you're sharing and expressing, as much as I've heard you share much of this before, hearing it again just reaffirms everything that you are. And there's a great reason why you are the CEO for Africa Matters, because of your heart, because of your passion, because of your vision, and because you're so frank in how you go about things. Now, what inspired you to start, and I think more than that, to continue with Africa Matters?
I would say the inspiration honestly came from you, to be frank once again, just to see how passionate you are as an African youth and how invested you are in terms of not just the benefit of yourself and growth, but the growth of others. And that really inspired me to want to work in the environment and to work and support other youth within the space that I'm in. And what actually inspired me to continue the work is seeing the amount of impact that our work has done for so many African youth and diasporans around the world. You know, a lot of people don't recognize how small our organization is. And, you know, at times it can be really frustrating and disheartening when, you know, we're not getting enough like financial support. But seeing like different emails and DMs and messages and people actually applying many of our soft skills and many of the narrative in our mission in different spaces really motivated and inspired me to continue to do the work that I do every single day.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Thank you so much for that. I must say it is, working with you is so inspiring as well. One of the things I always love to tell people about when they ask, how's Africa Matters? I'm always like, sure. Having an incredible and so hands-on co-founder working with you is the best thing. I don't think we'd be where we are today if it was an initiative that was just run by one person. But because we work so well together, we bounce off ideas, we share frustrations, we share hopes. I think that's why Africa Matters is where it is today.
Thank you.
Now, numerous studies have shown how nonprofits led by people of color receive less funding. What's your experience been like?
That's a really, really interesting question. And, you know, this is something that you and I have discussed a lot in private. My experience, I would say, it's really disheartening to say, honestly, how challenging it has been in terms of securing funding within the nonprofit space. I can see so many projects, not to say like we're comparing, but there has been so many other projects or organization or initiatives that are being funded. But mm-hmm. if you look at their board of directors, or if you're looking at their senior management, their diversity doesn't look like what we have. And it can be really, really frustrating to be within the space when you know your flagship programs are solid, your team is solid, your work and your mission is solid, and it's very valid at that. And not being able to have sufficient funding to support or even like pay salaries to different team members can be very, very disheartening.
Yeah, no, I think that you answered that so, so well. I mean, I can just hear as you speak, the frustration. I also just get frustrated when we talk about this, because you're right. When everything is in check, the only thing that is missing is a white person on your board or on your leadership. That is quite disheartening.
Okay. I just wanted to say that, you know, what you're saying is 100% correct. And there's this narrative that in order to obtain funding, especially international funding, that you need to have a white person either leading your organization or helping with fundraising within the organization, which can be very challenging. I recall about a year ago, I read this article. I can't remember their name at the top of my head right now, but he spoke about how many African organizations in East Africa in particular add white co-founders specifically from America to support getting venture capitalists to invest in their organizations in East Africa. And I found that quite intriguing, that you would kind of like, you need to have a white face, so to speak, to represent your organization in order for funding to come in. And it's really interesting because there's a study that was done by Bridgespan and Echoing Green that spoke about, you know, how nonprofits led by people of color get less funding than those led by white led groups, irrespective of them pushing out the same mission. So for example, if there is an organization that had a white leader very similar to ours, changing the African narrative, empowering and upskilling youth in Africa, this particular study states that the white-led organization would get more funding and support than us as a Black women-led organization.
Yeah, and the fact that there's also been some studies about that is just, it just proves that the nonprofit industry has to change. Yeah. And why not support Black people who are empowering the communities that they come from? Why exactly. do we need a white stamp of approval?
Exactly. And it's very interesting because, you know, most of the time, especially when it comes to monitoring and evaluation, there's always this saying that, you know, the saying that African solutions should come from Africans, but how is that going to happen if Africans are not trusted with funding to be able to push out different initiatives, to be able to push out different monitoring and evaluation schemes that these funders need? Instead of, I'm just trying to understand and grasp the terminology or like the thought processing of how a white person has better knowledge than a Black person, irrespective of which country they're from.
Now, beyond the financial barriers that Black-run nonprofits face, what are some other barriers that we also face?
I would honestly say support. There's like, if you could see within our private networks or just like different spaces of Black-owned businesses or organizations, to get a retweet or a like or a share from a friend or any other person of color can be extremely challenging. But you can see, and it's the dynamic is so interesting. You can see that, you know, sometimes the followership could be from white supporters who are trying to do better, especially with the whole Black Lives Matter movement, right? White supporters who are just like, no, I'm trying to do better. I'm trying to be better. And they start liking and they're sharing and they're retweeting and they're sending information to their friends. But if you look at our private networks, I'm not saying that Black people don't support Black people, but Black people are the first people to start critiquing each other. Like say, for example, we wanted to, like if we were selling our t-shirts, we sent it a day late. We will definitely get, you know, some sort of messaging saying, hey, my delivery is late or what have you. But if it was another counterpart, who was selling a t-shirt and was a day late, I think the dynamics would change just slightly a little bit. Maybe they'll say, oh, it's because of COVID or it's because of the delivery service. But I don't know. I'm just saying like we're Black people are more open to critiquing Black people as opposed to white-owned organizations or companies. But I would say definitely support has been one of the biggest barriers.
That is so important. You know, I think that we definitely have what they call the call-out culture, where we're super quick to call each other out, but not as quick to support each other. Mm-hmm. And in light of the Black Lives Matter movement, how do you think we as Black people can support one another more?
It's within the question. It's just to support, you know, even it's just to follow on social media, send information to friends who are interested in this particular work or any type of work or sectors that different Black nonprofits or organizations or companies are focusing on. Being able to be advocates for different organizations is another way for Black people to support one another. Sign up to be a webinar speaker, sign up to be a mentor, sign up to be a contributing writer or a media contributor for our space in particular within Africa Matters. But if there are spaces to volunteer and support, where if you can't financially support different initiatives, you can do it for free with social media. If we're calling out Karens, if we're calling out companies who are doing the wrong thing, we can also use that energy to share different brands and different organizations who are doing things for the culture within our small networks. And then the more we're growing and we're engaging with each other, the more our community as Black people strengthen.
That's really, really important. I like what you said about how we can call out the Karens of this world, but we have to support each other.
Exactly.
And we have to be intentional in it. Now, what advice would you give to Black youth who want to start their own nonprofits?
The advice I would give them is to do it. You know, what the COVID period, Corona has shown us is that time waits for no one and time is very fluid. A lot of people don't understand that, you know, everyone plans, pre-plans and, you know, do all these things. But with Corona, all the plans have stopped. So anything that your heart desired, just do it, because you're never going to know when the opportunity can come forth again. I guess another bit of advice I would say is just, you know, try to talk to different people who have already established nonprofits. Try to gauge some advice from them, just like that. Say maybe if it's on LinkedIn or Facebook, Twitter or Instagram, and just saying, hey, so-and-so, I am so-and-so. This is the type of initiative that I am trying to start. I know you've been within the industry for X amount of years. Would you be open to having maybe like a 10 to 15 minute call just to give me advice as to what I can do to start off? And I think that would be a really good start. To be honest, not every single person is going to respond, but I would say out of 10 people, you communicate at least 2 to 3 would be able to respond and say, hey, here's my schedule. Please book a meeting. Let's have a chat there. And if they're doing that, to be prepared with the questions that they have for these individuals that they're communicating with.
Yeah, sure. That's important. And I really love what you emphasized about saying, just do it. Go ahead. Yeah. And that's why, you know, at Africa Matters, we say we are the ones you've been waiting for. Don't wait for anybody. Do it yourself.
Exactly.
Now, last question is, what motivates you to keep making an impact with Africa Matters? And I think we discussed something a bit similar about what inspires you. But this time, you know, what gets you up every single day to keep doing the work that you do?
I would say the team and the supporters. And I say the team firstly because they are extremely inspired by the work. And through their inspiration, you can see that in their output. Like our social media team, our program team, they really invest their time. You know, sometimes they work over hours, which, you know, I try to caution and say, you know, we're going to have some boundaries, but they're so passionate about the work and there's so many ideas that come out and execution as well, you know, happens through these ideations. And we plan and we strategize and we're always thinking of how can we get not only the organization, but African youth invested in themselves in the next 5 years. And we're not even thinking like 20 years or like, you know, STG goals or like AU youth development goals. We're thinking about the next 5 years. How can we get African youth to shift their minds, become more engaged, become more involved in their communities and within themselves? So I would say that's my first level of motivation. And then the second is our supporters. As I mentioned a bit earlier, like we get so many emails and messages saying, how can I be a part? I really want to, you know, create impact in my community. How can I be an ambassador? Like ambassador is definitely like one of the biggest questions, most common questions rather, that we receive all the time. So that really motivates me to know that the work that we're doing isn't in vain. And it keeps me going every morning. Even if I sleep late and I know I have to wake up early because of the time difference, I'm just like, I'm doing this for the team. I'm doing this for the supporters. And I know at least in 5 years' time, the impact that we're making now and that we've made 5 years ago will definitely show a lot of fruit.
That is awesome. That is so awesome. And it's so great when you're working with such a supportive team and you've got great supporters. Now, as we end off, Rianne, I just want to thank you so much. It has been, I think this has been the hardest topic we've had so far, but a very important one because we have to be frank and honest about the challenges that Black-run NGOs face, but also how we can overcome those challenges and what sort of support we need from our own community for us to be able to overcome the challenges.
Now,
you go.
I wanted to add, actually, something that I didn't mention a bit earlier, the importance of not just individuals, but African, Black-owned companies and venture capitalists investing in Black-owned organizations or social enterprises. A lot of times, you know, you'll see that there are white venture capitalists that do invest in Black-owned organizations. But I think that if we're trying to make Africa great, right, we need to have venture capitalists and corporates or even just philanthropists invest in different pockets of African organizations that are creating sustainable impact onto the continent. And I think that is another way of support for us to try to mitigate some of the wrongs that have happened with white-owned organizations on this continent in particular, receiving more grant funding or just seed funding in general than Black-owned organizations.
And with that, that is the call for Black venture capitalists, Black-owned businesses, invest in Black-run nonprofits. If you want to see impact being made on the continent, if you want to see social change, invest in Black-run nonprofits who are working on the ground for the communities that they care for. Africa Matters is one of them, but we know there are so many others out there. Rianne, thank you so much. I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation, and I'm so sure that different listeners have listened, they've heard, they've learned, and the articles you referenced are just so incredible and prove that something has to change within the industry we work in, and we need to continue the good work that we're doing.
Thank you, Farai. I really appreciated this conversation, and it's something that, you know, you and I speak about in private quite often, and I'm glad that we're actually bringing it into the public space.
That is awesome, and I'm so, so glad as well. And with that being said, thank you, dear listeners, for joining us once again for another episode of the Africa Matters podcast. Such engaging content, such critical content, if we want to see a change within our society and if we want to shape the Africa we want, because we are the ones we have been waiting for. Please do subscribe to the Africa Matters podcast on your favorite podcast platform. Give us a 5-star review for this amazing content. Share the podcast with your friends and with your colleagues and with your family members. And we just want to thank once again the Engage Podcast Network for this amazing platform. And we also want to thank the fantastic Africa Matters team that we work with for their commitment for changing the African narrative. Thanks so much. Have a great one further.